The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. We have reached the unofficial start of NBA trade season. Quick note, there's actually no such thing as NBA trade season. We in the media just sort of made that term up because, you know, it makes for an easy hook. And people love trades and trade rumors and everything that goes with it. And frankly, this is how we pander to it. There is no trade season. December 15th is simply the date at which a lot more guys who sign over the summer are eligible to be traded. And yes, it loosens up the market for trades, but there's not really a trade season, folks. People could have made trades like a week ago. They're not going to make trades today just because we've hit December 15th. It's all silly, but we love trades and we love trade talk. And if we're going to discuss trades, potential trades, intel, all the latest rumblings around the league, there is no one better than my pal Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports. He is my guest today. Jake's as plugged in as anyone covering this league, and he's had a couple of really timely stories lately as well. One about Joel Embiid that got some buzz, which we will discuss, and one on Jordan Poole, which seems especially timely now given Steph Curry's shoulder injury and his likely absence for the next couple of weeks. How do the Warriors proceed from here? Does that impact their trade market discussions? And which teams are we keeping an eye on across the league? And how will the unprecedented parity this season, which I wrote about recently, how will that impact all the trade discussions? We will discuss all of that. Before we get to it, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts, and hit me with your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Jake Fisher is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now very pleased to be joined live from an undisclosed Homewood Suites somewhere in the continental U.S., Jake Fisher. Jake, live from your kitchenette. It's nice. It's got some nice dark stained wood there. I see a microwave. Probably came with some, like, a free bag of microwave popcorn. Do they do that at the Homewood Suites?
There was no free bag of microwave popcorn.
Oh, come on.
I got two free water bottles upon entry, and as a New Yorker, I'm always suspect of the quality of the tap water whenever I leave the greater New York City area. So we appreciated the bottles of water, although from an environmental standpoint, getting the plastic bottles is always a tough pain, but you know, it is what it is sometimes.
That is a quandary. I appreciate there's at least a few hotels I've been to in the last year where they've gotten rid of the water bottles entirely, and they now have like just the dispensers, the ones where like the machine where you can just go up, put your bottle in, and it has a little sensor there, fills up your bottle. So I've taken to trying to travel with the bottle. I'm trying to be good, but it's hard. You go to a hotel, they're just going to keep shoving plastic bottles of water in your hands, and you know, what are we going to do then? Yeah. Appreciate you joining me while out on the road on assignment and in a busy, crazy week in the NBA. They're all busy, crazy weeks. I don't know why we even bother distinguishing one from the next. So we're speaking the morning after the news on Steph Curry. So I do want to get to Steph Curry and his shoulder and what it means for the Warriors and some trade season chatter, because we just had the ridiculous unofficial opening of trade season, December 15th. I don't know why we do this. We'll talk about why we do this. It's the unofficial opening of trade season, and it means absolutely nothing. But that's fine. I want to start with Joel Embiid, though, and the Sixers. Because while I don't necessarily think the Sixers are going to be active they've got Daryl Morey as GM. They'll always be active in the trade market, at least looking around and scouring. But they're one of the interesting kind of below, I don't want to say below the radar, but they've kind of been off the radar early in the season. Injuries, underachieving a bit. Still don't know what they are. As you and I speak, they're three games over 500, and you had some time with Joel Embiid within the last week, one-on-one with him, talking about the state of things, his partnership with James Harden, the Sixers' hopes and dreams, and some strange detours that the conversation took that we'll get into in a second. But let's just start with this. You talked to Joel Embiid one-on-one. He doesn't do a ton of these. Curious a little bit just from a reporter standpoint how it came about. I know you did a book about the Sixers too, or with a lot of Sixers in it anyway. So you've been around that team a lot. How did you end up having the one-on-one with Joel Embiid? What is the sense you're getting from Joel Embiid about his the state of affairs there and how he's feeling about where the Sixers are right now?
Yeah, so this is Friday, December 16th. So last Thursday, so a little over a week ago, took the train down from New York to do a story on a separate Sixers player. I'll say that. It's not a big, huge, needle-moving topic, but he's got an interesting story. And when I went down there, though, I made sure to tell Sixers PR, you know, to really sell the Amtrak ticket to the bosses, it would be nice to make sure that I can get Joel's voice in this. So, I mean, you're the veteran of this industry. I'm sure you've done way more. You know, you walk and talk as they're walking to the team bus or they're heading to their car after a game or a shoot around, whatever. That's what I was expecting to get with Joel, honestly. I was standing with PR at the practice facility, like literally between the exit to the players' parking lot. And you're kind of, I mean, I just told a friend, I'm about to head to shoot around here to sit down with someone. I told a friend yesterday, like, to me, maybe this is wrong, but I never expect even like a guaranteed availability to happen until it happens, right? Because that's just kind of the nature of the business. So with Joel, even that day, PR was like, we'll see what kind of mood he's in, because you're right. He has not very often wanted to really sit down and talk with people. I remember reading Mark Stein's newsletter recently about asking him about the French national team, and he didn't seem too eager to talk there. So I'm standing, and if I'm being storytelling, tell me, but it's a podcast and we got to fill 40 minutes. So I'll bring it to a close in that I was expecting him to just talk for a few minutes about this other teammate, and which that's throw a run around Christmas Day. And he just pointed to the table like 5 feet away and like pulled up a seat on his own volition. And I brought a copy of my book to give to him because he was in it pretty often and figured it'd be a nice little touch. And it was cool. He looked at it. He goes, "Oh, Bill Toulouse. Like I've seen a lot of these around here." And you know, the question that I kind of wrote more artfully before the Q&A started in the story of like, you know, give a message to the fans who are kind of frustrated. I said to him, what I directly said to him was, you know, I'm from here, and he goes, "Yeah, I know you're from Jersey." So he clearly he paid attention. Like he clearly felt that I was someone who has been around the team. I understand what he's gone through from before he was even drafted to Philly. So I think when he says to me, which I'll do your segue for you to kind of be valuable in how long-winded I've been here. When I said to him, like, you know, give the message to my high school friends in my fantasy football group chat who are freaking out about this team, you know, give them reason not to panic. And he said, "I don't know, Sixers fans want to trade me," but he smiled. And I think that's a microcosm of where he's at, in that I think he recognizes having been an MVP runner-up the last 2 years and not really wanting to, he's not like a super, as much as he's a troll online and he makes these funny comments, he's a pretty introverted person and he spends a lot of time off the court. in sweatpants playing FIFA at home. So I'll bring this to a close in saying that, like, I really felt like he kind of feels super comfortable where they're at and feels comfortable where he's at. And he's kind of seeing the bigger picture now of how you kind of need to take control of your narrative sometimes in this present day where a former employer of both of ours can take one quote out of context and blast it across social media, and it turns into a national disaster for Philadelphia 76ers fans.
In fairness, the practice of taking a single quote and removing all context and blasting it out across the universe is now something that everybody does. So not just a former employer of yours and mine. In fairness, it's sadly now just about everybody, which is why your podcast is called Don't Aggregate This. I assume that's more or less the genesis of that. It's pretty straightforward.
Well, I titled it because I know it will be. And I think it's really funny to read an article saying, you know, Howard Beck said on the Please Don't Aggregate This podcast. it's just so it's that really gets me every single time.
It's a great meta joke. Props for the podcast title and for taking advantage of our completely fucking warped media ecosystem. Let me get to that quote, the quote that, of course, was, in fact, aggregated wildly. So I'm going to read from your story. He was then asked to deliver a message to the Jake Fisher childhood friend group chat to the segment of Philadelphia's fan base that has found cause for panic, that is pounding their timeline to remove Doc Rivers and wants to declare that the trade that landed James Harden is already a failure. Those are the sentiments of apparently your group chat, or at least Sixer fans that you're hearing on radio down there. And Embiid says to you, quote, "I don't know. Sixers fans, they want to trade me." And then you write, the 28-year-old grin wide, his breathy laugh filling the space. There's that twinkle in Embiid's eye when he's ready to unwind and talk. And then you say to him, "You don't believe that." And Embiid says, "I do believe that. They want to trade me." Is he just dicking around, or does Joel Embiid really think that there are fans who want to trade him? Because the only time I've ever heard in the last couple of years, and I fear this being aggregated now, the only time I've ever heard Joel Embiid's name mentioned in quote-unquote trade rumors is when rival executives or scouts around the league do the, well, who are we keeping an eye on? Well, you know what? If things don't go well there with him and Harden, or if things don't go, like, whatever the current drama or relationship of the day is in Sixerland that is merits scrutiny, if that does not go well, we're reaching a point where Embiid at this stage of his career, while still in his prime, could be the guy to want to ask out, right? Like, it's not that complicated. It's the way we look at every superstar in this league these days, especially if you're a two-time MVP runner-up and one of the most dominant players in the league and he's having a spectacular season. Like, it's logical. If you took a swing with this coach, and none of them work out, eventually we all assume, and rival GMs assume, oh, well, maybe Joel Embiid will ask out. That's all there is to it, folks. So, like, this is not a trade rumor. That is the only context I've ever heard Embiid's name even linked to the word trade, Jake. So where is this coming from?
Yeah, the only other context I've really heard it is who the Sixers could trade for to pair with Joel Embiid, right?
So yes.
I think where it was coming from is it's Philly, right? And, you know, I was listening to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast while I was waiting in the Moynihan train hall to head down for that that reporting trip. And that pod has a great, they have like an answering machine line. I don't know how the technology works, but they take calls from listeners that are recorded. And this one guy was just furious after a loss. I forget to who it was, but was saying, like, they're a disaster. They're not going to win anything. Blow it up now. Harden stinks. Trade Embiid, blah, blah, blah. So, and Philly is, I mean, I'm from the area. I went to school in Boston. I live in New York now. All three cities are pretty similar in their approach to their sports, which I find funny, being that all three cities are also like, we're not like the other two, and they're virtually identical in terms of sports profile. I think Philly sports talk radio has more of like a woe is me energy than the others. And I think the media scene in you know, on the local airwaves has a penchant to want to try to play doomsday scenarios out further. So I think Embiid having Troll L. Embiid as his Twitter name, like, he's aware that that stuff happens. And I do think that maybe he is trying to probably spark a little, like, no, we love you type of reaction. And if there is any type of goal from that. Also, like, it was a random Thursday, and I think he was just fucking around, if I can say that on. And to really solidify the standing he has in the franchise, like, after we stood up from our literal sit down and he starts walking away to the car, Daryl comes over and, like, pulled him into his office to talk about some strategy, let's say. So, huh. I mean, he's in, and I think that's just a small literal sight, not even a scene, that's elemental of, like, how that operation works there. Like, everything that, you know, in Brooklyn, I think it might be sometimes overblown how much Kevin Durant is involved with leadership there. But I think in Philly, for sure, they work in lockstep. I think Daryl, they're not taking orders from Embiid, but they definitely consult him on virtually everything. So, I think there's nothing to worry about for Sixers fans in terms of him being the centerpiece and the pillar of this franchise, definitely through this season. And, you know, if they have another disastrous, shortcoming in the playoffs, I think every situation that could seem as sturdy as possible is always open to be revisited. But I mean, right now, and the resources that this team has invested in building a team specifically around Joel Embiid, I think he's pretty happy. And the first quote in the story was him saying how he loves where the team is at. So I think that's all you need to know.
That was a completely non-aggregatable response, Jake. Like, your entire, like, there was way too much nuance there. You're supposed to say if it crashes and burns, that's it, it's over. If everybody's out, Harden's out, Embiid's out, Doc's fired, Daryl's fired. Like, you're giving the aggregators nothing to go on here. It's really very sad for the aggregators. It's been choppy, to say the least, the Embiid Harden thing, right? Like, they've had some incredibly dominant moments and some periods where, especially right after that trade last season, it looked like they were just going to roll people. And people got carried away with, like, it's a new age Shaq and Kobe and all this stuff. Like, you know, calm down, people. And it didn't go so well in the postseason. Harden in particular, because Harden often doesn't go so well in the postseason, kind of a thing for him. and he's been hurt now. And so we don't have a massive sample size of these two together. I do still sometimes hear rumblings from other teams, like, you know, hey, I'm not so sure those guys really like playing together that much. That's still a thing. But I also feel like they haven't played together enough to really work out the rhythm, the chemistry, the feel for each other, and to get on a roll because of injuries and everything else. Obviously his team is still playing without Tyrese Maxey too. So, you know, but the three games over 500, like, do you get any sense, having been around them a bit and having spent a lot of time around that team in general, like, is that partnership solid enough? Like, does everybody feel like that is still the basis for a contender? The Harden Embiid partnership surrounded by, obviously, you know, Maxey and a bunch of other really good players.
I think so. For one obvious quick answer, in that Daryl's leadership structure has always been predicated on what are our championship odds, like, literally looking at what the numbers suggest that the team's championship window is. And I don't know what the number is, but they seem pretty convinced at it, being that the number is very, if I'm getting this wrong, forgive me, but I believe Daryl's MO is that as long as you have a 5% chance of winning the title, you are a bona fide contender. And that's obviously very, very minuscule odds. So from that standpoint, I think everything is really kosher there. And also, I wrote it in my story. I read Yaron Weitzman's kind of mini profile, whatever the feature, whatever the descriptor is on his story on James Harden that came out at Fox Sports this morning. And he had the same thing there, that Sixers people are super quick to point that their pick and roll combination analytically was the number one pairing of all pick and roll combos that did 500 pick and rolls together last season. And Joel even like cited that off the top of his head in my story. So like, clearly that's a message that they've all kind of bought into.
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, I tried to write this analogy in the story I wrote in about Sacramento and De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis coming together. And my editor took it out because he didn't want it to seem like they were saying this, that like, to me, the superstar pairings that come from the Houston Rockets tree, obviously Daryl was before Houston, where, you know, Gerson Rosas paired D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns together in Minnesota, Monty McNair, general manager in Sacramento, trading for Sabonis to bring with Fox. Like, this is not Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant locking arms and joining somewhere together in free agency, or Kawhi and Paul George coming together the same offseason and Kawhi choosing to sign with the Clippers because they're trading for Paul George. Like, when two superstars who are advancing in their age, I mean, Embiid's still, you know, right smack dab in the middle of his prime, but he's not 21 anymore. When they get put together by trade, to me, I think, as someone who is moving forward in my personal life partner relationship, and other friends of mine are either behind me or ahead of me in that little like window from pre-engagement to engaged to like early marriage, like, I think a lot of things that cripple particularly men is the anxiety of the wealth of choices that theoretically any person has. And like, at a certain point, you just have to accept, if you are choosing this path, that like, no one is going to be a perfect fit, and this fit is really great. So let's just like embrace it and pour as much water into it as we can and like help this thing bloom, right? So to bring it to an NBA perspective, like, or James Harden and Joel Embiid cut from the same exact cloth to be this, you know, two puzzle pieces that fit perfectly. I don't know if there is a like, even the Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors, you know, because it's not just by style of play, it's by personality, and it's by these people enjoying being coworkers and spending, you know, it's not just 82 games a year. You know, if you're on a 5-game road trip, you're playing a game and then flying out that night and checking into a hotel at 3 a.m. and waking up at 9 to go to shoot around. Like, it's a long season with a lot of time around each other. So I say all this to say, my strong sense is that these two guys clearly look at each other as their obvious best pieces right now in this, but that was available to them to go get a championship together. So I think that is clearly the crystallized overarching goal of this group. And, you know, if we ever get to a point where that is proven to be not their ultimate ceiling, I think everyone will readdress it. But for now, I think also the team not being healthy, where Embiid and Harden and Tyrese Maxey still being out, have all missed significant time. They're also maybe not using that as an excuse, but it seems like they're looking at that as a reason for optimism that we haven't exactly reached our maximum capacity here. So I think the confidence is high that they will, that they're still a work in progress, and that the fit with Embiid and Harden will continue to progress as they get more and more time together. And I mean, I think they've still only played under a full regular season games worth of games together in their entire partnership. So
Yeah. They're
still learning each other out. They're still figuring out how to, you know, a little pocket pass here, the timing on this or the timing on that. So I think they're all viewing it as something that's still maybe if it is still a work in progress, that like, it's still good and things are flowing and the vibes are good, to say the least.
I think what NBA listeners are, or fans are listening to this podcast are learning now is that, when they think about stars and commitment issues and everything, as you alluded to, they're now probably wondering too, like, wait, is this about Joel Embiid and James Harden? Does Jake Fisher have commitment issues? Is that what we're finding out on this podcast? It kind of sounds like maybe, you know, you're projecting a little bit. I don't know.
I did for a bit.
So, but Harden's actually really, like, it's a great analogy. Listen, it's funny because we always use the term honeymoon, right? This team, these stars are in a honeymoon after this trade, or this star and this team is in a honeymoon period. We throw around the marriage and commitment kind of, you know, verbiage analogies with sports all the time anyway. And Harden, let's face it, I mean, the guy's like a five-time divorcee or something. It was Harden and Dwight Howard, Harden and Chris Paul, Harden and Russell Westbrook, now Harden and James, Harden and Joel Embiid. Like, He spent his whole career.
Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you skipped one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that. It was like 5 minutes. It's easy to forget. That was his, oh God, I don't even want to say it. I was thinking of a celebrity marriage that only lasted 20 days, and I just don't want to go there. It was one of those. Harden has gone through his share of co-stars, to say the least, maybe more than anybody in the course of the first, 10 years of their career. If this one doesn't work, that's pretty much it. Like, I don't know that James Harden's getting another. Like, Embiid will get a new co-star of some sort if it doesn't work out. But Harden, like, this is kind of the last shot for him, I feel like.
Last quick point to kind of sum up everything we talked about. And the Sixers, and I think Embiid himself too, I think they truly are hoping that Tyrese Maxey will become that guy. And once Harden exits stage left and maybe Tobias Harris's contract comes off the books at a certain point in time, like, there will be this kind of changing of the guard where, and then maybe at a certain point in time, Embiid even takes a step back and he's the supporting cast to Tyrese. Like, I think they are confident, or at least hopeful, that they have the pieces in place to continue to navigate this thing forward.
And they've got Daryl Morey as GM, which means we know they will always be incredibly aggressive for any opportunities along the way. So December 15th, we mentioned, is when the NBA officially, non-officially opens trade season. By the way, this didn't used to be a thing. Like, I don't know if you would use just Google search for this, Google Trends or something, but the idea of NBA trade season, we just created this out of thin air within the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years. There's always been dates at which players who were signed over the summer or signed certain kinds of contracts can be traded officially. It was never trade season. We never actually said, oh, this is when it all starts. And now we have, Bobby Marks at ESPN does obviously a phenomenal job in all these things. On the one hand, tweeting 88% of the league is now trade eligible, and 74 players in particular, according to Bobby, became trade eligible on the 15th. But then Bobby's also the one turning around and saying, but by the way, everybody, reminder, doesn't mean that we're going to have some flood of deals on December 15th. That almost never happens. In fact, we're not going to probably have a flood of deals or much activity between now and February, probably, because it just doesn't work that way. There is no trade season. There is just simply the time at which more players are eligible. So yes, it's easier to make a deal now. There are more deals to be potentially made, but no one knows when this will start to sort out. But so let's just start with this real quick, though. The Warriors obviously off to an incredibly bumpy start to their title defense. Very strange season for them anyway. Steph is now out for a matter of some weeks. We don't know how many games he'll miss. They're already flirting with disaster. They can't win on the road. In the context of this being the unofficial official trade season, what do you think this does to the Warriors' outlook and the growing discussion? And it's been there in the background for a while, and I think it comes to the foreground now of, well, at what point do you see what you can get for Weissman, Kuminga, Moody, whoever, some combination thereof, future picks? Like, they do have some things they can, some assets they can use if they need to fortify themselves in the short term. There's no replacing Steph Curry, duh. But I don't know that you want to go 2, 3 or maybe more than that weeks with just Jordan Poole, your other young guys who are still kind of a work in progress, and then a Klay Thompson with a lot of miles and who's being rested on the second night of back-to-backs, and Draymond, who's got a lot of miles. Like, I don't know how sustainable it is. I don't know if there's a trade to fix that, but what do you think that the injury does to their outlook in the trade market?
To be clear, I haven't talked to anyone with Golden State since the injury news happened, but I was on the phone with someone from Golden State literally like a couple hours before he got hurt. And I think a lot of teams right now in that middle tier of the pack of both conferences are looking at everyone being bunched up as further reasoning to kick the can down the road at their own internal evaluation. But like, we still have to figure out like how good we are, blah, blah, blah. To me, I've been saying this on a couple things I've done now. To me, that's bullshit. Like, sure, maybe you have to figure out how good you are in relation to everybody else. But after 20, 25 games, like if I'm sitting here on my couch looking at the league pass schedule of what games I can watch. And I know, all right, the Rockets play this way, the Hornets play this way, the Nets play this way. And I'm kind of like done my early season phase of like, oh, I want to see what this team is up to. Like the people who are getting paid upwards of millions of dollars to evaluate their own team have to have a strong sense of what they think their weaknesses are, or what their strengths are. Right. So yeah. I think that's more of an excuse that a lot of front offices are using to kind of hold their cards close to the vest here. But with Golden State, I think their bigger issues have been the veteran pieces that they've been able to plug in, dating back to David West. Like, Jamichael Green has not been what they were hoping he would be. Dante DiVincenzo has been in and out of the lineup. He's been streaky. Like, losing Gary Payton and losing Otto Porter, and even Nemanja Bjelica threw in some great minutes for them in the finals. Like, that, I think, has been more of what I've heard Warriors people looking at the positions to address rather than some type of big swing. So I don't know if this Steph injury does change things. I wish that my Jordan Poole story that I dropped like a week ago about how could he be the guy, this bridge that they were hoping James Wiseman could be. I probably should have saved that for a week to put that out now. That would have been good timing. I'm a big Jordan Poole believer. I spent a lot of time with him in Sacramento. And the kid's just sharp. Like, I feel like I have had whatever modicum of success I've had in this industry by like looking at people like yourself and Lee Jenkins and Mark Stein and just looking at the work and like the details you've got in your stories and thinking back, well, what question did you ask to get that information? How did you get that sit down with that person? Like, I think when people want to be successful in a competitive environment, I think it's the only way to be smart about being successful is to act stupid and try to come from a place of ignorance and truly like, I'm uninformed. How do I learn? That's how Poole approaches his craft, by asking Steph and these guys questions. So I am curious now to see if this is an opportunity for him to back up what I wrote. But outside of that, I don't think there's a big cause of panic there. And I think they're still kind of like, all right, we're Golden State. Like, we don't stress ourselves out too much. So we'll see if, I mean, we're going to go to the Warriors always show out to showcase Santa Cruz as one of the bigger G League outfits throughout, you know, league history of competition and having a good unit out there. So they'll be out there fully staffed. I'll be curious if that tone has changed now that he's out at least 2 weeks. Like, I had only heard that he was definitely missing the New York game. So now that he's out at least 2 weeks, that's a big, because the standings are so bunched, they could fall pretty quickly here, depending on how things go.
Yeah, and because the standings are so bunched, it, you know, maybe nothing knocks them out either, right? You know, this is a really, at the moment, this is a very forgiving season. And I wrote about, you know, the unprecedented aspect of NBA parity recently. And I feel like that's going to have, as you alluded to, possibly a chilling effect on the trade market, because if everybody thinks they're in, then there's no sellers. You know, teams are going to, I wrote that based on the quarter mark of the season. We're now closer to what our buddy Mark Stein calls the first trimester mark. So we are through the first trimester of the season. We're a third of the way in. To your point, yes, I agree. Teams know who they are by now. You may not know exactly where you're going to land in the standings at the end because things are so weirdly bunched up this season, but you kind of know what you got and what you don't have and whether you're comfortable with the players you have and the way that they work together. So like, I'm very curious to see how this goes. And I do think, you know, maybe there'll be some separation in the standings in the weeks to come here. And by mid-January, maybe there is more clarity and thus more sellers. But with the Warriors in particular, even before Steph went down, like, obviously they're having some issues this season. Obviously they have some depth problems, some bench problems. Obviously they are missing what they got from Gary Payton II and Otto Porter Jr. Like, you know, I have thought since before these players were players, they were just only picks and a glimmer in the Warriors' eye. I've always thought they should trade the picks that became all these guys to get immediate help, because that's the way I always look at these things. If you've got Steph Curry, if you've got LeBron James, if you've got an all-time great, if you've got Kevin Durant, you're just all in at all times. And so I am curious to see now, not just because of Steph's injury, no one trade's going to fix that, but to the extent that they are going to have a lot of ground to make up and they need help, and they need veteran help, I think. I'm very, very curious to see whether this means they eventually say, you know what, who's got the most value? Probably Kuminga of the young guys. Weissman, it's a tough deal right now, and you know, Moody's been up and down. I'm just very curious to see if it's either Kuminga's now good enough to play big minutes night in, night out, or is it he's the key to getting us the kind of veteran help that we're missing right now?
Yeah, I just think from the that was the 2020 draft. I remember, you know, they had two picks, and I remember there just wasn't anything out there. Like, I remember there was some talk about LaMarcus Aldridge at the time, and like in 2013 when the Cavs had the number one pick in the draft, you know, 7 years earlier, they were thinking about trading for LaMarcus. Like, he wasn't the same. He wasn't worth the number two pick. And, you know, when they had 7 and 14, or yeah, they had one pick in that draft and two picks later. Like, they're just, there wasn't enough. Even Portland was looking at trying to figure out what to use that seventh pick this year, that ended up becoming Shaedon Sharpe. They're just, there haven't been players that have just, for whatever reason, that have been available, that have been quote unquote worth those high lottery picks these last couple of years. And also, I don't know how many teams are willing to have their superstar and just gift wrap them over to Golden State. Like, there was all that talk about Bradley Beal in lead up to his contract extension last summer. Like, would the Wizards have wanted to watch Bradley Beal go become the perfect, you know, final finishing piece to extend this next amazing era in Golden State? Probably not.
Probably not. On the other hand, they haven't exactly done anything good with Bradley Beal, so I'm not sure they should be worried about what anybody else is doing. I will say, so a great piece on Jordan Poole. This is what you do now, by the way. This is when you say to your editors, hey, you know what? That Jordan Poole piece, you know, we got a nice run. It was great. We, you know, I was really proud of that story, but you know, he's never been more relevant than right now. We should push that thing back up to the top of the stack on the page. You know, we should feature that again. You know, like, it's still relevant, still fresh. You know, nothing's changed except that he's just got a bigger role now. We should push that back up. So you got to lobby the editors to like bring back the story that now has added resonance. It'll get like that's an extra like 20,000 reads if that comes out today.
This is why I call you the professor, man. You know all the tricks of the trade.
I do think, like, Jordan Poole, some of his best moments last season were when he just got free reign, right? Like, there have been times where it's the Jordan Poole show, and I think, I mean, the kid's got just an amazing amount of confidence. He's just bursting with confidence. He does have a swagger to him that at times feels like maybe disproportionate to his actual production on a given night. And there are times where it seems like the swagger is you know, a little out ahead of him. But there are times he totally lives up to it, and he seems to love big moments, and he's hit some clutch shots for them. Like, I'm not saying they're going to be just fine without Steph. That would be ludicrous. I do think that Jordan Poole is going to I think he's going to welcome the load and the responsibility in the next couple of weeks. And I think that they'll be okay because of that. But it's, you know, that also just means now you're down one more, you know, guy off the bench, or, you know, whatever. I know he's been starting recently.
It's down one of the greatest players of all time.
just one of the greatest players of all time. No big deal. All right. So broadly then on the trade market, just a couple quick hitters here or quick-ish hitters anyway. Is there any one team or player that you think is driving this thing right now? In other words, is there a linchpin to the whole thing? We've been, you know, obsessed with what the Lakers might do with Westbrook. Now, mixed signals about whether they would even trade. Like, I don't buy any of that, by the way. Like, the Lakers are constantly putting out like these signals, like, oh no, we actually love having Westbrook. Like, you know, if you could trade him for something, you know, multiple players that are more helpful, I think they'd still do that. But whatever. Is it about Westbrook and the Lakers and whether they're going to finally do something there? Is it about the Hawks and? It's always John Collins, but it feels like the Hawks just have a whole thing they've got to address. The Hawks are kind of a mess right now. Is it about the Pacers and whether or not they think they're actually going to be weirdly competitive with their young crew? And hey, now we want to keep Hield and Turner. Like, who's, you know, is it the Jay Crowder thing, which continues to be one of the more puzzling situations in the league? Like, who's is there any one key to unlock trade season in terms of a player or team?
Yeah, it's a good breakdown. I think, like, to me, I tend to look at each of these transaction cycles, whether it's the trade deadline or the draft and free agency, as like there's more of an inner vortex that will spin out and hit everything. So everything you touched on there, the Lakers, the Suns, Atlanta, New York, and Houston. That kind of seems like the big center of this whole, you know, glut of inactivity right now. You could throw Detroit in there too, where teams are looking at Bojan Bogdanovic, and the Pistons are definitely playing a bit of hardball right now, it sounds like, in terms of what their valuation of him is and how much they value him in what they're building. That's kind of the center of, I mean, clearly everyone else is talking, but those are the teams that come up the most. I think there's definitely bigger fish out there that I am going to make more calls on today, and I'm armed with going into showcase and want to ask people about. But in terms of like the stuff that's really happening on the ground, the calls that are being made right now, and things that have sounded more like legitimate rather than just early. It's funny, like you'll talk to certain executives and they just think that a team calling them and pitching an idea is like a nothing burger, which I guess it is in theory, but like for us and for fans trying to figure out where these teams' heads are at, like any idea that is thrown across a phone line is a data point to understand where that front office is working from. So like the fact that Atlanta keeps looking at Utah as a landing spot for John Collins and then potentially as a team to rope in for a three-way structure to get Jay Crowder, like I don't necessarily care if that wasn't like someone could look at that and say, well, that wasn't a real thing. That wasn't like we didn't talk a three-team trade. But if one of those teams is pitching that idea, like that to me is noteworthy. So I do think that we need one of those things. That's typically how this market shapes up. There needs to be a domino to fall before everyone who is looking at themselves in the standings and saying, you know, I don't know how good we are. A lot of that comes down to there are very few executives who, in truth, can just make a deal independent of worrying about their status or what their reputation will be in this economy, where it's not just the aggregation world where now, you know, executives have a scorecard and you know, a reputation amongst even, you know, every single blog out there who won the deal. I think there is reticence for executives to be the first one to set the market. So to me, it does feel like we'll get either a Jay Crowder trade or, you know, something with Atlanta. The Knicks are repeatedly mentioned as the most active team calling around trying to find a home for Fournier, Derrick Rose, Emmanuel Quickley, Cam Reddish. So if that feels to anyone listening, if that feels like every article you're reading about the unofficial trade season centers around those people, that vortex, if you will, is certainly, I think, the stuff that's closest to getting done. It might not happen until February, to your point, Howard, but that's the stuff I think that's the closest to getting done that will potentially have ripple effects moving forward.
Yeah. It's interesting because the Knicks chatter is not involving Randall anymore. And or it was either early in the season or maybe it was late in the preseason, sometime in October, I think, when you know, folks I had talked to were basically saying like, you know, this is the one to watch. Like the Knicks want to get off of Julius Randle, and maybe the fact that, you know, for all of his flaws, he's still kind of their engine on a lot of nights.
Every night.
Yeah.
The Knicks win. Julius Randle's playing well. That's pretty much it.
So it's interesting that he's kind of fallen out of that discussion. I feel like we should still keep an eye on it somehow because I always look at it as the long term, right? And the Knicks have been very short term thinking lately, I believe. But in the long term, like, all right, is Julius Randle the guy who's going to, you know, lead you back to prominence? Probably not. So that didn't surprise me when I heard about him being mentioned earlier in the season. Now that things have kind of progressed to where they are, it seems like that's fallen away. But I don't know. I would still keep an eye on that. This is my general rule of thumb about quote unquote trade season and the trade deadline. We have a list. We just mentioned it. You and I just named like all of the likely suspects. Right? Crowder, Bogdanovic, Poeltl, who you wrote about recently, John Collins, Buddy Hield, Miles Turner, all the Knicks that you mentioned. Most years what happens is that none of the guys we're talking about get traded, or maybe one of them does. And then the biggest deal is the one that nobody saw coming. So I'm going to ask you a self-negating, contradictory, might open a rift in the space-time continuum question. Given that every year there's a big trade that we don't actually see coming, who's it going to be, Jake Fisher? Who's the guy that we're not talking about that is going to actually be the one that on February, whichever date, I didn't look up the trade deadline date, February, on that date, we're going to go like, oh, holy crap. That guy just got traded. How did we not see that coming? Who's the guy that we didn't see coming that you're going to see coming? And I apologize to everybody if we do open a rift in the space-time continuum with this question.
Okay. I'm going to give a temperate answer, as I am wont to do, in that I'll say this. Like, Chicago a couple weeks back, everyone was like, oh, the Bulls, they're terrible. Like, look at them to be a seller. And then now, I mean, I wrote about them, and teams are still thinking, oh, yeah, they could be a seller. But there's also plenty of talk that they have no interest in selling right now. I mean, maybe they'll do some things to retool and maybe move off Vucevic or something like that. But I am skeptical that they're just going to be doing a fire sale and you'll see Alex Caruso and DeMar DeRozan and all these people heading out the door. Toronto is the team that I think rivals are looking at, that things aren't obviously going super smoothly. I saw there was an article today by I forgot, honestly, but someone saying, like, this is on Nick Nurse to figure this out. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of players that have been apples of people's eyes of recent transaction cycles, where I had someone with the Knicks recently telling me, you know, we should have gone after Fred VanVleet the year we didn't. Like, we should have.
I said that at the time. I'm on record. I said it at the time. I also said it to some people I knew with the Knicks at the time. Like, why aren't you guys chasing this guy? He's perfect. He's two-way player. Great character guy. You know, whatever. Funny. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
You're good. So you got Fred. You've got Gary Trent, whose contract is coming up, and OG, who's playing out of his mind, who definitely will want to get paid, or his representation will definitely want him to get paid. That, you know, that's the type of stuff that starts to draw trade activity, where a team starts to get word of the number that they think their player wants, and maybe they're not going to want to foot that bill. So I'm not saying that all three of those guys or one of those guys are going to get moved, but I've been struck by how many people from other teams are looking at Toronto and saying that, unlike Chicago, where maybe they will be, they'll have pause because the Bulls won 6 championships with Michael Jordan and they just are happy to make the playoffs. They don't necessarily need to be chasing championships like other teams, and they just like to be a relevant playoff team. I don't know if that's the actual thinking there, but that's what people say. Whereas Toronto has, and Masai and Bobby Webster have shown clear abilities to just swing for the fences, trade for, you know, Kawhi, make big moves in terms of the sign trade with Kyle Lowry. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if the Raptors are still kind of in this muck of 7, 8, 9 in the East, and they decide we can either package a couple of our guys to go get someone, or we can trade someone to move that fits more of a Scottie Barnes timeline. Like, that, I don't know where their head's at. Yeah. Like, I'll say that candidly, but they're just a team that has made big moves in the past, that has a lot of players on it that a lot of teams would be interested in, on interesting salaries that are very movable, that I think is just something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, and the Raptors, to your point, I mean, like, that's a franchise without sentimentality, right? When you trade DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, like, they're not worried about sentimentality. They're not worried about, like, you know, whatever loyalties, any quaint ideas about any of this stuff. It's kind of that Danny Ainge kind of, you know, ruthlessness that Masai and Bobby Webster have too. And so I think, and they could go either direction. They really could. They have that advantage with a lot of young players and a lot of guys on movable salaries, that if, you know, and I don't think they'd be afraid to take a step back either if they thought that was their best long-term play. The Bulls are funny because, I mean, I think everybody had mixed feelings about it in the beginning, right? Just the general commentariat, you know, when they made the deal for Vucevic, like, what do you, you know, this is your win now move. This is like, they're so desperate to be relevant in a playoff team again. And like, that they're still, I don't want to say the jury's out on that deal. I think Orlando won that deal, frankly. But the Bulls got what they wanted, right? They that was the first step toward becoming quote unquote relevant again, and then they go out and they get DeRozan and
Lonzo.
It's fine, but there was a very low ceiling on everything that they just did over the last 2 years. But it, as you said, Jake, earlier, like, conversations that don't lead to trades, even if they're just ideas, it gives us some insight into the thinking and philosophy of a franchise. So does moves like that. They had to know that there's a low ceiling on the, you know, trade Wendell Carter Jr. and picks and everything else that went into getting Vooch. going and getting an older DeMar DeRozan. Like, they know that, that's not some long-term play and that it's not even a play that puts them in title contention. What does that tell us? It tells us that they really, really badly just wanted to be in the playoffs again. It's just fine. You know, that's okay. It's come at a pretty steep cost, I think, in terms of the assets they've sent out. And it's a short-term bump, and I don't know where it leads to. I don't know if it's the best idea, but I get it. And every franchise, you know, so it's always easy for us to do the, and I've done it myself recently, I try not to do these too often, the blow it all up take, right? Oh, the Bulls should just blow it up. This thing's going nowhere anyway. Yeah, totally fair take. Easier for us to say than for them to do. You've got tickets to sell and fans who, you know, have bought tickets and an owner who probably wants to make the playoffs and all the other stuff that goes into it. So
well, people are playing Jenga. You can just be the five-year-old who walks up and whacks the whole tower down. Very easy to do.
That's by far the best Jenga player role is to be the person who just destroys it. Like, that's more fun.
As a very serious Jenga player, I vehemently disagree. But that's another reason.
I haven't spent a lot of Jenga time. Maybe I need to work that into my repertoire. Are you good at that?
Great bar game.
Great bar game while you're drunk or getting drunk. Are you uncommonly steady hands while drinking? Is that the thing?
I think I have uncommonly steady hands. We're really showing a lot about my personality here.
Maybe going a little too deep. Yeah.
I remember when I was a little kid and when you'd be playing a board game and like your mom or your friend's mom would come in and say, you got to take this to a different room. Like, I would be the one who would like carry the board with all the pieces. And like, I don't know. I got
the entire Monopoly board with like the little dog and the thimble and the race car, everything, all the houses, all the hotels, all the cash. Yeah. And you get that to the other room and nothing has fallen off the board.
That was my like 7-year old party trick. Yeah.
Wow. That's good stuff. That's great. Along the way, could you tilt it just slightly so that now all of a sudden, you know, the person's on Boardwalk with the hotels on it? Could you just...
No, because I think that's part of the craft. You need to be in the sanctity of the game. So,
I should expect nothing less of a young Jake Fisher, because you do things to the highest quality and the highest principles. So I appreciate that consistency.
Some people would disagree, but...
Yeah, they're wrong.
That's a perspective. So, yeah.
Speaking of which, check out all of Jake's work, of course, at Yahoo Sports. His book still out there, Built to Lose: How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Go pick up that if you missed it the first time. Is that in paperback now?
It's now in paperback. I really would be afraid to see the number of paperbacks copies sold. So, yeah, if you're listening, help a brother out.
still time to pick up Christmas, Hanukkah presents, whatever else, folks. Yeah. And of course, he's got the Please Don't Aggregate This podcast. Please don't aggregate this podcast either while you're at it, aggregators. Jake, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy your kitchenette in the undisclosed location. I'll let you get to a shoot around of an undisclosed team. Thanks so much, man.
Appreciate you. Take care, man.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Jake Fisher. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with your feedback on Twitter, @HowardBeck.